is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The vote reflected Senegal's posture of non-alignment, similar to many other African countries over the years. It isn't a vote of support for Russia, he says, but a vote for trying to maintain neutrality.
That's Joseph Siegel, Director of Research for the Africa Center for Strategic Studies on the African Union, asking Russian President Vladimir Putin to seek a lasting ceasefire in Ukraine. Details coming up. Also, Amnesty International is urging South Africa to intervene and stop groups who terrorize immigrants. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Senegalese President and Chair of the African Union, Macky Sall, has asked Russian President Vladimir Putin to seek a lasting ceasefire in Ukraine. Sall's talk with Putin comes just a week after Senegal abstained from a UN vote to condemn the Russian invasion. As Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, African nations have interests in seeing an end to the war, but also in not upsetting Putin.
Sall's request as chairman of the African Union Wednesday was a contrast to his actions as Senegalese president a week prior, when Senegal joined 16 other African nations in abstaining from a UN vote to condemn the Russian invasion. Senegal is considered a beacon of democracy in West Africa, so the move came as a surprise to many. Joseph Siegel is the director of research for the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He says the vote reflected Senegal's posture of non-alignment, similar to many other African countries over the years. It isn't a vote of support for Russia, he says, but a vote for trying to maintain neutrality. Russia has a plethora of business dealings throughout the African continent. Senegal, for example, signed a $300 million deal with Russian oil company Lukoil just last year. The company also has operations in Cameroon, Egypt, Ghana, and Nigeria. Russian mining companies are also active throughout Africa, from extracting diamonds in Angola to aluminum in Guinea and uranium in Namibia. Most notably, Moscow is Africa's leading supplier of weapons. Since 2015, it signed military agreements with more than 20 African countries. Furthermore, private Russian military companies with close ties to the Kremlin have gained an increasingly strong foothold in African countries such as Mali and the Central African Republic. So, while it may be in the best interest of many African countries to avoid tension with the Kremlin, leaders are beginning to feel the ripple effect of the war. Abdourahman Cham is the head of the Political Science Department at Dakar's University of Cheikh Anta Diop. He says Russia is a country that exports a lot of products, like gas and raw materials such as wheat, and that can have an economic impact, especially with regards to trade. Luckily, the African Union does have some sway, Cham says. He says international relations are not only decided by major world powers. The African Union is still a regional institution that can be considered an influential voice. Russia also needs Africa, he added, and it's in their best interest to listen to the African Union. In a statement about the call, the Kremlin referred to the invasion as a special military operation to protect Donbas and did not mention Sall's request for a ceasefire. Instead, it stated that Russia was asked to safely evacuate foreign citizens and said both leaders had reaffirmed their commitment to further develop Russia-African relations. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Market, energy, and financial analysts are warning the U.S. President Joe Biden's ban on Russian oil imports will cause prices of fuel, food, and other commodities to rise further, including across Africa. Petrol prices are already at record highs all over the world as the U.S. and Europe especially try to pressure the Kremlin to end its invasion of Ukraine. Darren Taylor has more.
South Africans, for example, are now paying about 80 rands, more than $5 for a gallon of fuel. Some analysts predict the fallout from the war in Eastern Europe will eventually see that double to $10 per gallon. And as the cost of petrol spikes, so too do food prices and almost everything else. Wayne McCurry, market analyst for one of South Africa's biggest banking groups, FNB, says bans on Russian oil imports will hurt the world in the short term, but will ultimately exact a far higher price from the Russian people.
Now imagine a Russian citizen. Your currency has halved. Literally in a week it's halved. You haven't opened your stock market yet, so you don't know if it's down 50% or 80%. You can't get access to any foreign funds that you've had. Russia today said we are giving every citizen a payment holiday, so you don't have to pay your mortgage or your motor car or all your personal loans or anything like that. I mean, this is the extent that they've gone to try and keep something alive in the economy.
Makary says the rest of the world is going to survive economically, although exorbitant fuel costs are going to make things very, very difficult. But Russia, he believes, is eventually going to descend into economic chaos, especially if Europe joins the oil ban and also stops importing Russian gas and coal.
I think there's going to be intense pressure on Western governments to say, no matter what the cost is to us, you must ban all Russian imports. Even if we suffer, Russia will suffer significantly more. Oil traders aren't touching Russian oil. So there was actually a ban on Russian oil before that was actually announced politically, because no Western country, no Western oil trader, no Western oil company is going to touch Russian oil.
Makary says Russian President Vladimir Putin has made a big mistake in thinking that the world cannot do without his oil.
It might take a while, it might be logistics, it might be difficult, but there's actually no shortage of oil anywhere. Even without Russian oil, there's actually no shortage. And one thing I've learned about commodity prices, when they go up to these high levels, output increases quite dramatically somehow. Because you had this one deposit that wasn't economically viable at $70, now at $130, that deposit, that well, is completely viable.
He says the world will have to bear extremely high fuel prices in the near future, but the costs will eventually begin to drop, even without the presence of Russian oil in the market. Makary says although he's an economics analyst and not a political expert, sanctioning Moscow is absolutely the correct strategy to follow to pressure Putin to stop his aggression.
I actually think the war will come to an end relatively soon because it is unsustainable for the Russian economy. I mean, they're going to have rioting in the street because people's livelihoods have been destroyed. I mean, the economy could shrink 15-20% this year. It's unprecedented outside of, you know, the major world wars that we've had this much of an effect on the economy.
He says the oil price could shoot up to more than $180 per barrel this year, a prediction that's in line with those of other international energy strategists. But Makary firmly believes that the world can learn to live without Russian oil. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
International human rights watchdog Amnesty International is urging South Africa to swiftly intervene and stop groups who terrorize immigrants that they say are in the country illegally. The group have intensified their activities since the beginning of the year. Amnesty warns that without quick action, the situation could quickly revert to the xenophobic violence seen in 2008. Tusoko Malo reports from Johannesburg.
This call follows violence that erupted this week in the Alexander Township in Johannesburg between foreign nationals and locals. It left up to 10 people injured, with 4 being taken to the local clinic. A group calling itself Alexander Tudula or Chase Out visited small businesses and vending stalls asking foreigners to go home and leave their businesses to South Africans. Retaliation by foreign nationals led to violence. Genevieve Quintal is the media and communications manager at Amnesty International South Africa. She told VOA that activities of those groups must be stopped before it's too late.
It is astounding that these groups have been allowed to take the law into their own hands and that authorities have not stepped in to stop the harassment of migrants. Police need to take action against these vigilante groups who are violating people's rights to safety, security, dignity and life, and fueling xenophobia. Otherwise, the message being sent is that it is acceptable for these illegal operations to continue, leading to an entrenched culture of impunity.
She said that the government's failure to punish those that have ignited and participated in xenophobic violence over the years has only encouraged others to do the same. Quintal added that allowing ordinary citizens to ask foreign nationals to produce documents is illegal and those behind it must be arrested. Meanwhile, the police say they have since foiled violence against immigrants that was planned by the Alexander Dudula movement. The group had declared a 5-day shutdown of the township, during which they wanted to chase out anyone without documents. Johannesburg Police Commissioner Max Masha told journalists that they've deployed enough officers to deal with the situation.
Our numbers are just outnumbering them, so it's making it difficult for them, even if they wanted to. We are investigating, a docket is being opened, and more arrests will follow. 5 suspects have been arrested.
David Tembe is the Johannesburg City Council official responsible for public safety. He told journalists during his visit to Alexander that the police will stay in the area until the situation is calm.
Public order policing is here. These are trained to deal with public violence. These officers are here to protect the community. Whether you are a foreigner or you are a local, they are here to protect life.
Leaders of foreign nationals applaud the police for diffusing tensions and ensuring the protection of migrants. The chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, Ngabuto Mabena, told VOA that they want a peaceful solution to the misunderstanding between locals and migrants.
We hope that they will continue doing their work and arrest the perpetrators. We also hope that they will be deployed in other areas where it is likely that violence might erupt between South Africans and non-South Africans. It is their duty to protect life and property.
The first incident of xenophobic violence in South Africa occurred in 2008 after locals accused foreign nationals of stealing their jobs, livelihoods, and committing crime. Over 60 people were killed and thousands displaced. The current tension is believed to be caused by growing unemployment, which is now above 30%. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Mali has announced a murder inquiry after an outcry in neighboring Mauritania over the deaths of its civilians in a border area. According to the French news agency AFP, 15 people have died in the zone in eastern Mauritania. Mali is contesting allegations its troops were to blame. In a statement yesterday, Malian government spokesman Colonel Abdoulaye Maiga confirmed that slayings had occurred and that ruling junta leader Colonel Assimi Goïta has ordered an inquiry and decided to send a high-level mission to Mauritania's capital Nouakchott as soon as possible. A new report in Parliament warns Zimbabwe's police service faces imminent collapse because of chronic underfunding. Adigando gives us more on the story.
The report from Parliament's Committee on Defence, Home Affairs and Security Services says an urgent effort is needed to boost morale among police officers and improve their pay and working conditions. An investigation into the state of police infrastructure and services done late last year detailed dilapidated facilities and housing for the police, inadequate equipment, vehicles, and fuel supplies. The parliamentary report says that poor pay and conditions fuel corruption in the police ranks, especially along the country's borders. The lawmakers who produced the report found that the Zimbabwe Republic Police Force had only 807 working vehicles, although it needs 7,000 vehicles to work effectively. Thomas Dole, sociopolitical analyst, says the report's findings have serious security implications for the country.
We are all aware that of late police and the military have been fingered in cases of armed robberies. And actually, their weapons have been moved. And it is a no-brainer that ordinary citizens have no access to guns.
The Parliamentary Committee on Defence, Home Affairs and Security Services concluded that the majority of the challenges faced by the police are a result of underfunding and the delayed release of funds by the Treasury. It recommended that accounting mechanisms be put in place to allow the Zimbabwe Republic Police to retain some funds, including fines and proceeds from its economic activities. Farai Magu, an analyst with the Center for Natural Resources Governance, rejects that idea.
That actually exacerbates corruption. We have been there before during Chiguri's time, where the police, on a stretch of 200 kilometers, they could mount up to 20 roadblocks. And these were not roadblocks. They were now extortion points. So the moment the police survive off fines, they are going to look for anything that can cause them to extort from the motoring public. So police must be funded from the Treasury.
The Home Affairs Minister, Kazembe Kazembe, said would respond formally in Parliament to the report and the debate following normal procedure before responding to questions from journalists. The police media office said it would wait for the minister's response before commenting on the report. Some critics of the government say the state of the police is indicative of the general mismanagement of the economy and corruption in the country. Peter Mtasa is with the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, a group advocating for greater democracy and better governance in the country.
The police services cannot be an island of success in a great sea of misery and poverty and deprivation. So it is expected that all sectors of public service are shortchanged by the corruption, are shortchanged by the illicit financial outflows, are also shortchanged by the smuggling and also the cartelization of the economy. So this is expected. The police services situation cannot be any better than education, where teachers have not been teaching and teachers are wallowing in poverty. The police personnel, you can see it in the street, they are clearly dejected and demotivated.
Mutasa says the situation is tantamount to state failure and that conditions are worse in rural areas. The government has struggled for several years to pay not just police, but also teachers, civil servants and medical staff at public hospitals. Dole and other analysts say an overhaul of the system of government is needed to plug the holes that create massive funding gaps for public services. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Chocolate makers are expected to raise prices this year due to higher costs of cocoa from exporters like Ivory Coast, the world's largest cocoa producer. Ivorian cocoa farmers say they've been forced to raise prices because climate change is making it hard for them to grow their crops. Henry Wilkins reports from Adzop, Ivory Coast.
Hershey, the largest producer of chocolate products in the United States, said last month it will raise prices on its products across the board due to the rising cost of ingredients. Meanwhile, chocolate makers like Dana Marue say they are seeing cocoa prices rise in Ivory Coast, the world's biggest cocoa producer.
We've noticed the price of cocoa is going up this few years, especially organic cocoa. So from the beginning, if we can say from today that those last 5 years, we can say the price risen 20%.
Demand for chocolate in America increased during the COVID-19 pandemic, and cocoa producers in Ivory Coast are struggling to keep up with that demand. Experts say one reason is the impact of climate change. Harvard University says that by 2030, parts of West Africa will be too hot and dry to adequately produce cocoa. The West African countries of Ghana and Ivory Coast alone produce 70% of global supply. Cocoa farmer Raphael Konan Kouassi took VOA to his plantation, a shady orchard where fat, green and yellow cocoa pods hung from tree trunks. He says trees are yielding less due to rising temperatures and poor rains. Almost all of the young plants die in the high season if you've not been able to get water to them. You have no cocoa, he explains. Kouassi receives government assistance in the form of cocoa trees, which are more resilient to the fluctuations of climate change. But he says government distributions happen at the wrong time of year for the saplings to survive. Christian Bunn of the Consortium of International Agricultural Research Centres, a global scientific organisation, says information about how the climate is changing can inform farmers on how to better nurture their crops.
And what we're seeing is that the onset of both dry and wet season can change. It's less reliable. During the season, there may be breaks in terms of, so there may be rain during the dry season, or there is a dry spell during the wet season, and the overall distribution amounts of rainfall they're receiving may change.
The data shows it may be better for farmers to stop producing cocoa and diversify into other crops, Bunn says. However, Olga Yenou, the CEO of an Ivorian company that supplies the Hershey company, says higher prices for cocoa could be welcomed by farmers.
My opinion is that these farmers should have better price, should earn more because they work hard, most are poor.
Her wish appears to be coming true. As climate change continues to bite, prices continue to surge. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Adzope, Ivory Coast.
To continue with our support of Zimbabwe against the illegal sanctions that have been imposed on that country and continue to cause undue problems, issues, and trouble for the people of Zimbabwe. And this we consider to be unfair, for these hardships are artificially created, and we continue to call on the international community to remove these illegal sanctions.
That was Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta calling for international sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe to be lifted. He made the comments yesterday outside the State House in Nairobi in the presence of his Zimbabwean counterpart, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was visiting Kenya. The US, UK and other Western nations imposed the sanctions on Zimbabwe in 2003 in response to human rights abuses and alleged election rigging during the rule of Robert Mugabe. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's Premier Men's Basketball League to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at dawn.